City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines. Offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow. LaSalle Bank. LaSalle Bank, making more possible.
Hey everybody, you're listening to Windy City Queercast, show number 33, and I'm Amy Matheny. I'm flying solo on this show. This is a special edition of Windy City Queercast, something scaled down as a very important interview to me and my work in radio and my life over the past 8 or 9 years. A man came into my life a while ago, Reverend Greg Dell in Chicago. Minister of a church here, Broadway United Methodist, that is a reconciling church, meaning a church home, a Christian church home that is very inclusive of GLBT people as children of God. And at that time, I met a man through him named Mel White. Mel White is now the founder of an organization called Soul Force, which is a nonviolent protest organization that goes around to churches, church conventions, and anywhere that it seems GLBT people are being persecuted by the religious right or religious conservatives. He has now written a new book called Religion Gone Bad, The Hidden Dangers of the Christian Right. And I am so excited that he has been able to sit down and spend some time with me to talk about this very personal story. If you are a gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgendered person who potentially grew up in a Christian home, this has probably been a struggle for you, being GLBT and listening to scripture, services, rhetoric that seems to either persecute you or present a world in which you no longer belong. And I have come to believe that that is not true. Mel White definitely has come through much of a struggle, quite a gauntlet of life as an ex-gay, and now living 20 plus years with his partner, to believe that that is not true, that God creates a diverse group of people to people his earth, and that it is a moment for us to witness and a moment for us to come out and a moment for us to create change in one of the last bastions of the good old boys club, which is the Christian community. Christian is a word I'd like to call back. I know there are many other communities who have tried to call back slurs, and Christian has almost become a slur to us as homosexuals. I would like to reclaim this word, really define what it means to be Christian and what it means to be a fundamentalist. So stay with me today. Stay with me as you listen to this episode. I hope it brings some enlightenment to you. I would love your comments and your feedback on our website, and we'll tell you more about that. But stay with us, and we're going to be talking today, Religion Gone Bad, The Hidden Dangers of the Christian Right, with Mel White. His credentials is like a game of contradiction, a homosexual, an ex-gay, an activist, a Christian, a ghostwriter for Pat Robertson, and a student of Martin Luther King, the father of a provocative screenwriter and today's new silent protester. Mel White has lived many contrary lives, it would seem, yet through all of these contradictions, he has stood firm in his foundation of Christianity. In his new book, Religion Gone Bad, The Hidden Dangers of the Christian Right, he fuses all of those lies into a call for change and asks us to wake up to the steady march against the GLBT community by fundamentalist Christians, while at the same time presenting our enemies with a perspective that is knowledgeable, terrifying, and laced with deep melancholy. Mel White, welcome. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Mel and Collie, not bad.
I know. Nice little
it's
pun
my
there.
Mood these days, too, you know.
I can understand that in reading your book. I want to go back a little bit before the new book, which is fantastic. I am devouring it and have already called my father. I'm like, I'm sending you this book or telling you to go out and buy it. That's what I should say, shouldn't I?
It's a lot cheaper.
But you chronicled your first struggle for all of us in your book about reconciling your coming out and your faith in Stranger at the Gate to be gay and Christian in America. And I have to say, when I heard about you and read this book, you really made a huge change in my life. Can you just tell us briefly about your struggle as an ex-gay?
Yes, I grew up in an evangelical Christian family. You know, back in those dark ages, I mean, we're talking about the 40s and 50s, nobody was talking about homosexuality like they are today. So young people who grow up in Christian homes today are far more prone to suffer from this constant anti-gay rhetoric. My dad was mayor of Santa Cruz, and the only thing I ever heard him say against gays was his city manager said he walks a little light in his sandals, which is, you know, that's not exactly persecution. But even then, I knew that something was wrong, and that though in 1953 I was attracted to the tent mate at the Boy Scout Jamboree, and from then on feared my sexual orientation, feared that I was a queer, terrified that I was a sick and sinful person, and went through all kinds of ex-gay therapies, from prayer and fasting and cold showers and electric shock and, exorcisms with Catholic and Protestant practitioners and marrying and having a family. All that time, I was attracted to men and was desperately in need of the kind of intimacy that that brought. And so one day, finally, I slashed my wrists after 23 years of marriage to a wonderful woman. She said, "You're gay. I like gay people. I just didn't want you to be one. We should separate." And I thought life would end. In fact, it began in a whole new way for me then, to learn how to accept my sexual orientation as a gift of God, to live it with integrity. It opened a whole new life to me, though I look back on my life with Lila and the kids as amazing time as well. It was very important for me to come to terms with my sexual orientation and accept it.
So let's talk about how that affected, and some people may not know this, but your son, Mike White, is a screenwriter they may know from the film Chuck and Buck, and has had quite a huge career, and your wife and your other the rest of your family. But you've kind of had two families. You've had your biological family and your the familial family, I guess, and then you've had this religious family that you were trying to reconcile. How do you think those two informed your work in both of these books and in the activism that you do?
Well, I have to say that Mike, his latest films were Nacho Libre, The School of Rock, right. The Good Girl with Jennifer Aniston, Orange County, and now he's directing his first film for Paramount called Year of the Dog. My daughter is this wonderful second grade teacher who has given me two grandkids who went on to get her master's in educational technology, and my former wife is executive director of the Pasadena Playhouse and about to retire. This is a theatrical family.
And it's fantastic that you had that experience. I mean, look at the gifts that family has given the world.
Yeah, see, I think God has a real sense of humor in the sense of saying, I want to give him the best of both worlds. Hmm. He's a spoiled brat, but I'll spoil him even further. I loved my family. And now I've been married to Gary Nixon for 25 years.
Right.
So those two families changed, but have remained the same. We are one large family now, one extended family that people say only could happen in California. But we love each other, and we understand each other, and we support each other. But the Christian family that I grew up in, meaning the church itself,
right,
has both given me the strength for the journey and at the same time has become my very worst cause of suffering. And from my brothers and sisters who are gay and lesbian, they have been victims of this rhetoric from Robertson and Falwell and Benedict XVI, Catholic and Protestant alike. And now I'm doing everything I can. Now that my human family has been restored, I'm trying desperately to restore my Christian family to what I think God wants it to be.
And in your book, what most people might find unusual, I find it absolutely I don't know, prophetic, is that you want to show all of those people that you just mentioned as full flesh and blood human beings. You really tell the stories. Why was that important for you to share so much about who these men are, and not just the horror stories of who they are, but who they are as mostly men of faith? Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, Benedict.
Yeah. See, they spend so much time dehumanizing us and demonizing us and demeaning our lives and our relationships that if I simply attack them in the same spirit, what have we gained? We've gained a kind of civil war. I'm trying to show that these men are not only sincere, but very serious about what their plans are for gay people. They want to disenfranchise us, to deny us our rights, to drive us back into our closets or worse, because they are convinced that if America ever recognizes gay people as a protected minority, that God will remove his hand of blessing and protection from this country. They are convinced that if this country sins in that way, by recognizing us, including us in hate crime legislation, including us in the military, including us for the rights and protections that go with marriage, including us as those who can adopt children legally and care for families, if we do that, if the country does that, they feel the country is lost. So though I tell their story as very sincere human beings, I also tell their story that they're sincerely wrong, and that the consequences of their rhetoric are tragic, and that we must do something to help them understand before they do any more damage to this country.
Well, and you do state this, as you just did, as a war of sort, and you must know your enemies. And though we're not painting them as bad men, they are on the other side of the battlefield, so to speak. And it's kind of the keep your friends close and your enemies closer. So if we're in a war, what is the motivation? Is it purely a moral war? Is it an economic war? Is it a political war? Is it all that and even more?
Well, they have declared the war. They have said that this is a cultural war that will mean the end or the beginning of this nation. And they see gay people as the primary scapegoat for the cultural demise in this country. They see us as being perverted, as being a threat to the church, a threat to the family, a threat to children, having too much power, having too much money. They go on and on and on. By the way, that's exactly what Goebbels dehumanized Jews. And
right.
That's just exactly the way tyrants throughout history have found scapegoats to demean and dehumanize them. But if that war has been declared to save America from us, then what option do we have but to defend ourselves and to try to overcome evil with good? And so I'm really an advocate of relentless, nonviolent resistance, that we haven't discovered yet how to resist relentlessly. Republicans have kind of given way to this powerful Christian right. Democrats are so afraid of them that they don't take any stands, that they're afraid to come out for us. And the church sacrifices us and our rights for the greater good of unity, so that at this point we don't have many allies.
Right.
And in this war, therefore, the most important and powerful force we have is simply coming out as a gay person, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender person, or as a heterosexual parent or ally. We need to say to people who live on our street, hey, we're gay, or our kids are gay, or we know gays. Let's not vote for that amendment that they're trying to hang on us that says gays shouldn't have the rights and protection of marriage. Let's go to the ballot box. Let's show them that we can win fair and square this culture war they've declared. But right now, progressive people are just kind of laissez-faire. We're acquiescing to what I think has become the greatest threat to the nation in the history since World War II.
You know, it's interesting that I'm talking with you, because I was actually just talking to my co-host, but yesterday afternoon, I had three Jehovah's Witnesses knock on my front door, and we talked for about 10 minutes, and very pleasantly, and they wanted me to read something out of the Bible, which I did. Was not offended to do that at all. We talked about my beliefs in God, and at some point, the topic of homosexuality came up, and I came out to these three people. And we proceeded to talk for another 15 minutes. And at the end, I said, you know, don't you think it's ironic that of the 100 houses you may knock on today, that how many people are going to talk to you, how many people are going to share your beliefs, and that God happened to have you knock on the door of a homosexual who is one of probably the few people who will talk to you. And it felt like such a huge God moment that I had yesterday on my porch, you know. I don't take that as irony. I believe that's actually God working through me and them, and I kind of was astounded by their response to me, which was fairly kind and sincere. And there were a very wide age range from a man 60 to a young girl about 17. So it is. I don't know if I would have the exact same experience with you saying you just need to come out, but that is a rapid force for change, is it not?
Yeah, and you have no idea what force you set loose in their minds.
Mm-hmm.
These people might have been gay themselves and struggling. Right. These people might have gay friends or family, you know. When we come out, we don't have any idea the power of that. It's like throwing that proverbial rock into the pond, man. Those ripples go out. And so if a person just says to one other person, I say to gay people, if you've only come out to one person, you've done a big thing.
Right.
Let alone coming out to the world and to your family and to your friends. So, yeah, at this point, people don't change their minds about homosexuality or homosexuals until they meet one. All the empirical data is a waste of time with them. But once they meet us, that's why I'm praying that Jerry Falwell's son will have twin lesbian granddaughters. Something that will confront him from the real world.
Well, and I think that's true, you know, because we seem to be battling this topic on the Hill, on Capitol Hill. We battle it in our church families. I'm a United Methodist member, and, you know, we're battling it in all the denominations. Obviously, the Catholics have battled it with the Dignity faction. And we're also, we just on streets, you know, it's in, we can have that. I love what you called the relentless, nonviolent protest. Real quick before we talk about, because I want to talk about Soul Force and how you have manifested the teachings of Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. and others who influenced you. But I just want to define real clearly for people that, let's define the Christian right or fundamentalism, because
that's
you talk
really
about this
important.
A lot in your book. And then what is the difference in evangelicals, of which I think you call yourself an evangelical. So how do we define these terms so we actually know who we're identifying here?
Yeah, absolutely. I am an evangelical. An evangelical evangel just simply means carrier of the good news that Jesus came, he lived, he died, he rose again, and that in his life and death and resurrection, we find new life. That the Bible is a strategic and important book that can be trusted in things of faith and practice, that the church and that the Holy Spirit, that all of those basic creedal statements are mine. What happened to evangelical world in about the early 70s was once again fundamentalism raised its ugly head like a virus. Fundamentalism, says John Carnell, is orthodoxy gone cultic. Karen Armstrong says it's militant piety. It's says the Jewish rabbi of London, it's trying to superimpose a singular truth on a plural world.
I love that.
It is basic. Its basic premise is we must believe in a literal Bible, and that literal Bible, we mean literal, it is to be understood as we understand it. Nobody with any kind of understanding of history can say we should read that Bible literally, because we don't even have the original autographs, let alone thousands of years of translation. We can't not understand the linguistic and historic context of these statements. We must study. You either take the Bible literally or you take it seriously. And so for me, fundamentalists are those who refuse to take it seriously. Evangelicals are those who will say, well, I'm not sure about this issue, but let's discuss it prayerfully. And so the virus is that kind of madness that takes over when you become determined to be the one who knows the answer and refusing to hear any other questions but your own.
And I've always heard the phrase, you know, you can't thump with a Bible thumper. But you have found a whole different means of doing this. And this takes us back to the nonviolent protests, which tell us about Soul Force and this organization and this movement that you have called us to.
Well, Gary and I were fasting in front of Robertson's place and trying to get people to understand that he was wrong about gay people. We took 9 ministers onto the campus of Pat Robertson's place and tried to get him to understand he had me arrested and during my 21 days in jail, I insisted that I wouldn't leave or pay the $50 fine until he came to see me, because that's what Martin Luther King and Gandhi both taught us, that we can lobby, and we must, and we can send in checks to help activist organizations, and we must. But until somebody takes it to the streets, that external pressure isn't being formed to make those who are working from within side take it seriously. So we have surrounded conventions. We had 250 people arrested at the United Methodist Convention in Cleveland. We surrounded Dobson's Place with 1,000 people for the last 2 years trying to get the country to understand. We've gone to jail. Several thousands of us have gone to jail. We've trained 10,000 people trying to help them understand that we've got to take stands at the ballot box and between the people in the ballot box. But, you know, quite frankly, I don't know how much we've affected in terms of change. I know that the people we wanted to change most are the people who stood with us, and we've been totally successful with that. And once you stand, you know, and are being arrested at your national church convention to protest their anti-gay views, you become an activist.
Yeah.
And it's really good for the person who stands with us and for the person looking on and for the closeted gay person who reads it in the paper or sees it on television. But to change the minds and hearts of these guys who lead this thing, I don't think we've accomplished much. And at this point, I really feel like they have won the battle fair and square in taking over the White House, the Congress, and the courts, and the churches. And therefore, I wrote people, you know, I wrote this business of religion gone bad for people to understand what a desperate moment this really is. And though we have hope that it will change, and though we have hope that truth will overpower untruth, right now, we've got to face the fact that we're living in a de facto theocracy, and that things could get very worse if another terrorist thing goes off and martial law is declared and gay people are the scapegoat again for what's happened. So I wrote this book with a great deal of alarm, and I hope people will read it and at least see for themselves if they can be convinced of it.
Yeah, and I think that the book, it's an amazing book, and I just want to say that Mel White is on tour right now with the book, Religion Gone Bad, The Hidden Dangers of the Christian Right. He is going to be in Chicago this Wednesday, September 13th, at Women and Children First, 5233 North Clark. He's going to be there at 7:30. You can also catch him in Minneapolis. He's going to be on the North and South Ends, many stops in California and throughout, and you can find information on the book at religiongonebad.com. And more about Soul Force at soulforce.org. But I do want to say that you sound like you from the book that I use the word melancholy, and it's not just a play on your name, but I think that through especially the story of Billy Graham in your life, I saw this view that I think a lot of GLBT people can understand of a parental figure who at core in his heart was somebody who you felt really was a man of God, and he does not fall in the same category as some of these other men, but lived in a time and a place in which maybe he was silenced more than he wanted to be by those around him. And I think you're I don't know, this is my take on the book, and it's one person's opinion, but you're asking us not to trap these people, possibly like a future Billy Graham, in this kind of time and place so that they can stand up. And you standing up has made a profound effect in my life, and I know many other people. So the fight is still on, and a fight for understanding, I think, and compassion. Is there one last thing that you would like to tell a GLBT person who finds himself a person of faith and is struggling with in their private moments?
Absolutely. If you are gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgender, or if you feel that you might be, don't believe what they say about you. God created you. God loves you exactly as you are. Take the gift of your sexual orientation. Accept it, celebrate it, and live it with integrity. Come out of the closet. Become a fully human being and know that God is in your life and loves you exactly as you are.
Great. I encourage you to pick up the book. I encourage you to pick up both of his books that I have read and to hear him speak. He is an amazing man. Mel White, thank you so much for being on with us.
Thank you.
and check out religiongonebad.com, or for more about the movement, soulforce.org. It is affecting change. Sometimes it is hard to see, but incremental change can create a revolution, and we are proud to have you as a part of our community.
Thanks, everybody, so much for listening to this very special edition of the Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And LaSalle Bank. LaSalle Bank, making more possible.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com. So that's our special edition. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. And please, we would really like to elicit your comments on this show at windycityqueercast.com and in iTunes.
And email us whenever you'd like at wcmgpromo@aol.com. That's how you and our giveaways with our shows.
And the next Queercast, folks, is just days away, so don't miss it. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
Get this podcast and more great ones like it on the High Performance Podcast Delivery Network from Podshow and Limelight Networks.
I love it.